Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. Broadcom has confirmed a $130 billion buyout offer for their rival Qualcomm. Some iPhone users are fuming over the new letter I bug. Tor has been leaking users' real IP addresses. And Australia's multi-million dollar broadband network is under attack from cockatoos. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Jeff Weston.
Yeah, man.
You're building a brand new, beautiful website.
What?
Aren't you?
No. Am I?
Oh, you're a terrible actor.
What?
This is where acting comes into play.
Oh, I didn't know we were acting.
You're supposed to act.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'm building a really cool website. Are you building a really cool website? Just because Jeff is confused doesn't mean you have to be. Visit cat5.tv/dreamhost to sign up for unlimited web hosting for your website with unlimited email accounts, MySQL databases, the latest version of PHP, WordPress, and more, and even a free domain name registration. It's less than $6 per month, so sign up today. cat5.tv/dreamhost.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. Broadcom has confirmed its multi-billion dollar bid for Qualcomm, revealing more details of the $130 billion all-cash and shares offer to buy out its rival chipmaker. Both Qualcomm and Broadcom are specialists in system-on-chip products, putting ARM-compatible silicon into various items, such as smartphones and the widely drawn world of the Internet of Things, which all chipmakers regard as the future of chip sales and manufacture. Broadcom's offer comprises $70 per share, which we now know is a fact, and is made up of $60 in cash and $10 in stocks. Broadcom CFO Thomas Krause said, "We look forward to engaging immediately in discussions with Qualcomm so that we can sign a definitive agreement and complete this transaction expeditiously." It's a bold move by Broadcom. Qualcomm, on the other hand, has sued Apple, attracted the interest of antitrust authorities in America, and earned the enemy of Intel. On the flip side, it's not only profitable, but is in the middle of its own multi-billion dollar buyout of a rival. So, the Internet of Things is definitely 100% the future of this actual product itself, right?
Like, well, for sure. Yeah, the Internet of Things being like connected devices and so on, right? So if you're a chip manufacturer, you want to be in on that.
Right. Okay, so what exactly is a system on a chip? Like, it's...
Well, I would imagine, I mean, we're talking about chips with firmwares so that the software is actually running on the circuit, on the chip itself. But these guys, I mean, Broadcom does, I think it's like broadcast circuits and chips, and Qualcomm does the modems for these devices.
Mm-hmm.
So various different, you know, different needs. You think of an iPhone and you think about a specific phone. You don't think about the fact that each little chip is made by different manufacturers, Broadcom being one, Qualcomm being another.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. But I, you know what my question is, if Qualcomm's doing so well and is actually a good rival, why bother?
Is Qualcomm doing so well?
Well.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
They're profitable, they say.
Yes.
Hey, 70 bucks a share?
That's the offer. Okay, so Qualcomm is profitable, right?
Right.
But consider the dispute that they've had since before January with Apple. Like, they're one of their biggest customers and obviously one of the biggest manufacturers in the world as far as mobile devices and that kind of thing goes. So they're profitable. Yeah, we're making money. We're in the black, but they're 90% down on previous years. So their profit is way down compared to previous years. So, no, they're not doing well. They are profitable. They're still making money, but they're on the decline.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
So, you know, the thing with that, you know, why would Broadcom be looking at buying Qualcomm? Well, it's an opportunity. They're doing poorly right now.
Right.
And as far as that goes, and I think it really all surrounds the Apple thing. I shouldn't say that they're doing poorly. They're not. Then they have other customers. But the whole thing with Apple is they've got patents that they're just, you know, Apple is disputing the fees that go along with those patents, and Qualcomm is fighting them, and they're suing each other, and there's all these lawsuits going back and forth, right?
So it makes me wonder if there's a perspective on it that, you know, Broadcom's sitting there going, well, if they win this, we get access to all the earnings.
If Apple? Or, oh, if they win the buyout.
Right. Yeah.
Well, this is it. Here's the thing. So imagine their stocks went down,
yep.
Qualcomm, mm-hmm. because of the lawsuit and everything else. So they're doing poorly that way. Then along comes Broadcom in this perfect moment, and like a vulture says, okay, we'll give you this unimaginable, like the biggest buyout in tech ever, $100 billion in order to take over your company. So if they say yes, now... Mm-hmm. Broadcom buys up all those the patent portfolio, and now owns it, and settles things with Apple, fixes that relationship, because Apple is already on the fence about their relationship with Qualcomm and right. saying, you know, maybe we want to just sever this relationship altogether. So if they say yes, if Qualcomm says yes to the buyout, now Broadcom can fix things with Apple and redeem that whole relationship and become this bigger entity. Now, right. If Qualcomm says no, however, the stocks go back down. The right. stocks plummet.
Right.
And Apple says, you know what? We still want out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's not a sure thing. This is just a theory. But, you know, what timing? What absolute timing?
If you're Qualcomm, you pretty much don't have a choice.
You kind of right. don't. I kind of feel that way. It's like, okay, we really need to take this. Otherwise, we're done.
Yeah.
Like, our stocks are way down. Now, their stocks rose when the offer came.
Right.
Like big time, and are continuing to rise at a slower pace, but, you know, it's happening. So as soon as they say yes, it's going to be a good thing for, you know, for everything involved. But if they say no, then it's going to drop right back down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. It's all in relation to Broadcom, I think.
Wow. All right. Thank you.
All the things that happen behind the scenes.
Speaking of Apple, some iPhone users have been left frustrated after an update to the iOS operating system curiously began to autocorrect the letter I to a capital A with a question mark. The affected version of iOS 11.1 is available on iPhones and iPads. A technology reporter shared his frustration on Twitter saying, I have a $1,150 telephone that can't read the letter I. Apple has outlined a temporary fix for the problem on its website. The fix involves editing the keyboard settings in iOS so that the right character, either an upper or lowercase I, is used. Apple has said that the issue will be fixed in a future software update, and not all iOS 11.1 users have been affected.
Wow.
Just the Canadians.
Yeah, the Canadian bug. Yeah. It's not a bug, it's a Canadian upgrade.
You would think that would be a simple patch, just fix it, upload it, and be done with it in one day.
Right, right. You would think that, but perhaps it's not.
I'm kind of envying Android right now, where if you have problems with your keyboard, you just install a different keyboard.
Yeah.
Apple is like locked in. It's like, you're on Apple, you can't change things.
Huh. Right.
So what would cause an autocorrect issue like that? Just programming?
Or bad dictionary?
A virus? Or
not a virus, I don't think. That'd be pretty unlikely. I mean, it could be like a disgruntled employee who, you know, having tried to delete the president's Twitter account, didn't succeed, and so decided to inject a strange character. It sounds to me like this was an update to iOS 11.1 that was meant to introduce all these new emojis. So maybe the emoji, like I think about I and then a strange, or A and then a strange question mark character. It kind of seems to me like maybe a high ASCII issue or something like that. Hmm. So, you know, the programmer in me thinks, maybe that, you know, it's trying to output a Unicode character or something like that. So what that means is maybe, you know, just that key, that particular autocorrect got corrupted or changed to something that it shouldn't have been. And so it's correcting everything. Because as you type, it replaces words. So imagine every time you press I and hit space, it replaces it with A.
Hey?
Hey?
Would you be fine unless you're trying to type in your password?
Oh,
that's true.
Me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Or A phone? my stupid A phone?
It is.
Keeps
funny
doing this.
That it's like, it's an I, right?
Yeah.
So,
yes.
But, yeah. Well, maybe that, so that makes me think. Maybe.
Maybe a prank.
Maybe a prank.
It seems a little bit too good to be true as far as humor. All right. Macs and Linux versions of the Tor Anonymity Browser just received a temporary fix for a critical vulnerability that leaks users' IP addresses whenever they visit certain types of addresses. Turmoil, as the flaw has been dubbed by its discoverer, is triggered when users click on links that begin with /:// rather than the more common https:// and http:// address prefixes. When the Tor browser for macOS and Linux is in the process of opening such an address, the operating system may directly connect to the remote host by bypassing Tor browser. On Friday, members of the Tor project issued a temporary workaround that plugs the IP leak. Until the final fix is in place, updated versions of the browser may not behave properly when navigating to /:// addresses. They said both the Windows versions of Tor and Tails, as well as the sandboxed Tor browser that's in alpha testing, aren't vulnerable. Tor's statement Friday said that there's no evidence that the flaw has been actively exploited on the internet or dark web to obtain the IP addresses of Tor users. Of course, the lack of evidence doesn't mean that the flaw wasn't exploited by law enforcement officers, private investigators, or even stalkers, for that matter. And now that a fix is available, it will be easy for adversaries who don't know about the vulnerability before to create working exploits. Anyone who relies on Mac or Linux versions of the Tor browser to shield their IP address should update as soon as possible and be ready for the possibility, however remote, that their IP addresses have already been leaked. Wow.
Very tool that's meant to protect your IP and identity.
Yeah.
Online. Boy.
It's true.
I have used and understand the prefix HTTPS, right? And HTTP.
Like a secure website.
Exactly.
Or an unsecure website.
I've never typed in /://
But you could click on links on a website that would take you there.
Right, of course. But I don't understand why you would even need to use something like that. Like, what's the...
Okay, so /:// typically refers to files on your own hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So a website... for example, if I was creating a tutorial on how to access network shares, I could tell you in my tutorial on my blog, in order to access your server at IP address 192.168.0.5, you can go to /:192.168. So I could use it in a tutorial, and /:// tells my browser, do this on the local network.
Right.
Or it might be like a local file for some, you know, for some reason, or, you know, a local uploaded image or something. So there are cases where it could be needed,
mm-hmm.
or where it is legitimately used. I know, like DocuWiki, for example, will convert local network share addresses into links, so that if I'm on my personal network and I click on that link, it will take me to my local internal server.
Right.
So that's a /:// link. Fairly uncommon, but in the wild, once this exploit is now known, people may in fact put those links on websites, or not even links, but JavaScript redirects, for example, to exploit the person's IP address.
Right. Yeah, now that the fix is available, now people are like, look at what I can do.
Well, yeah. You know what happens when a fix comes out? Is everybody who is malicious says, oh, that's how I can get people's IP addresses.
Right.
Now there's a fix. I know how to exploit that browser.
Right.
Now for people that use Tor browser, they obviously don't want their IP addresses to be exposed.
Sure.
So what happens in this case now where their IP address is exposed? Is there anything they can do?
What can you do if your IP is exposed, right? Like your ISP, your internet service provider, controls your IP address. Think of the IP as, and it stands for Internet Protocol, it's your phone number for your computer,
right,
for your network. So when you go to Google and you type in a search, it responds back to your computer with the results. And that is done through your IP address, and that's very, very important. And it generally, you know, if you're on cable or fiber or anything like that, generally doesn't change. And if it does, it's very infrequent, like every couple of years. I know cable internet here in Canada, it might be every couple of years you'll see your IP address change. When they rolled out IPv6, the IP address has changed. And I think that's the only time that I've had it change in 4 years.
Now, see, with mine, if I restart my modem, my IP address changes.
So you're on DSL?
No, I'm on cable.
You're on cable, and are you sure it changes? Your public IP changes?
Yep.
So some ISPs do that. Because there's a pool of IP addresses. There's no guarantee that it's going to change when you restart your router.
No, that's
certainly
right.
DSL is a case where it's probably going to change because it reconnects over PPPoE with your username and password and then gets a new IP address every time you restart your router or your modem. So it's a little bit different. But with internet on cable, it quite often keeps the same IP address.
Right, and that's what shocked me is when I saw that mine reset, I was like, well, that's interesting, because I chatted with my ISP about it, and I'm like, why did this happen? They're like, it's a security feature they have.
In a business, though, in a business, typically you're going to be sitting on a static IP address.
Correct, yes.
That means that phone number of your network never changes. So if somebody is exploited on that IP address, you are never going to lose that IP address. It is now identifiable to you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Good times.
If you're interested in knowing what an IP address reveals, here's a little trick for you. Go to Google. Okay, so just go to your favorite Google search engine. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say Google is because they have a tool. In the search, instead of doing a search, just type in IP. So that stands for Internet Protocol. And it will actually respond with your public IP address. So what Google sees your IP address is. Now copy that and go to maxmind.com. MAXMIND.com. MaxMind is a geolocation technology that allows credit card processors and banks and online e-sales portals to use IP geolocation data to verify people's identities. So that service is used for legitimate purposes so that people can verify that, hey, yeah, you're making a purchase on my website. You say you're from Quebec, and indeed you are. Check. If you say you're from Quebec and you're actually in Israel, I think there's a red flag there.
Right.
So you go to maxmind.com, and if you scroll down the page a little bit, there's a little place where you can paste an IP address to test it. Paste that IP address from Google in there and go. And you're going to see all the information that MaxMind reveals about your IP address.
Cool.
Interesting little test for you if you'd like to see what your IP address reveals.
I'm doing that today.
Very, very cool. Thank you.
Take it one step further.
Uh-oh.
Real quick, it gives you longitude and latitude. Copy that, paste it back into Google Maps.
It tells you where you are?
Nope, just try it.
Okay.
It gives you a longitude and latitude result. Paste it into Google Maps and see what you find.
No, I'm scared.
All right.
Australia's multi-million dollar broadband network is under attack from cockatoos. The National Broadcast Network said it has spent tens of thousands of dollars so far fixing cables that have been chewed by the birds. They also estimate the bill will rise sharply as more damage is uncovered. In an attempt to improve Australia's internet speed, currently lagging behind many developed countries at 11.1 megabits per second, a national telecommunications infrastructure project has been instigated and is due for completion in 2021. But engineers returning to sites have been finding spare cables chewed and frayed. The culprits are cockatoos, a type of parrot which normally eats fruit, nuts, wood, and bark. And now wires. The company has had to replace power and fiber cables at the cost of tens of thousands of dollars each time. So far, they say they have spent $80,000 of local currency, which is roughly $61,500 US. The company says it's currently installing protective casings, which cost $14 each, and that will protect the wires from the birds in the future and save billions of dollars and save their $3 billion network from further damage.
Wow.
So
stop making the internet out of nuts and berries.
It reminds me of an old story that we told in the news about mice were eating the interior, like the soundproofing or something inside a car that was green.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah.
That's right.
They had some kind of biodegradable insulation and wiring insulation that was...
Right.
Apparently delicious.
So I'm thinking that the birds probably aren't eating the wires. I think that they're probably using them as either nest material, because it probably looks like a twig. Or perhaps Australia didn't think about it and put something yummy in there.
You know what? I think it's more that they're sharpening their beaks. I mean, they're known...
Yes.
Cockatoos are known to peck yes. to sharpen their beak. So okay. you get something like a good solid wire and looks like a good thing to sharpen yeah. my beak on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as weird as this story is that it's cockatoos,
yeah.
what I was actually most shocked about is the fact that their internet is so slow.
Oh, 11.1 yeah. megabits per second. And that's high. Like their average in Australia is 8.5.
Like that's insane. Like how is it that Australia yeah. is so far behind on that?
How far behind are they? Well, think about this.
For the birds.
Ultra HD video on Netflix is 25 megabits per second. Okay?
Right.
So why are they so far behind, Jeff?
Cockatoos?
No, I think, you know, it's probably political. Okay. The company that runs the internet service in Australia is government run. And in, you know, the early 2000s, the plan was to upgrade the infrastructure to fiber. We're going to do 100 megabit fiber lines all throughout Australia right. and upgrade everyone. So, you know, I think the plan was that 95% of Australia would have access to fiber internet. Mm-hmm. That was the plan. Now, the 2013 election happened and the Liberals came in and said, you know what, we're actually going to change things and we're going to focus on cost savings. We're going to try to make, right. you know, we're going to make the black here. And that didn't go so well for the internet.
No.
No.
The choice was made at that time that instead of upgrading to fiber, we're going to tap into the existing copper infrastructure and try to work with that. So use newer technologies over the copper infrastructure and keep going with that. Now, so the idea was that it was supposed to be cheaper. It was supposed to be faster to deploy. And it turned out it was neither. And it's costing them a lot of money, and they've got this terrible infrastructure that is being eaten by cockatoos.
Yeah. That's
the
too bad.
The birds are tapping into yeah. the infrastructure.
I think that the solution would be, it's government stuff, right? Like, so it's like a government monopoly over the internet. So imagine if your internet service was provided by the government. That's how it is in Australia. So because of that, infrastructure is completely driven by governmental budgets and legislation and bureaucracy. So you think about that, and you know, if they would just privatize that sector of, you know, the infrastructure of internet telecommunications, if they could
and
privatize that.
Everywhere cried.
Well, yeah, you've got a different perspective, I'm sure. But you think about, you know, why are they so slow? That's the question.
Yeah.
Why is their internet
yeah.
so slow? Because it's not. Pardon me. It's not publicly.
Right.
Yep. You know, it's right. private right now. I want it to, you know, I think, that, sorry, it should be public. Because right. if it was public, then we've got competition. We've got mm-hmm. fair competition. We've got the price coming down. You know, the government says, oh, well, the Australians don't want it to be faster. They don't want
what?
That's what they said.
They don't want
that's what the
that?
CEO of the broadcast company or whatever they call themselves, that's what they said. But
oh,
the fact
ridiculous.
Is, they don't want to pay for it.
If
they
you're
don't,
watching and you're from Australia.
Yeah.
Please comment.
Am I right? Like, it's not, I mean, the government is misquoting Australians and saying that they don't want to have it when really they just don't want to pay the astronomical fee that the government wants to charge them for it. So if it was public instead right. of privatized, pardon me, if it was public, then there'd be competition and the infrastructure could go up and the cost could come down. So now I can get faster internet and it's affordable.
Right.
That's the key thing.
So really the tagline out of this is, Polly want a cookie.
It's how about our internet the is
internet
for the
internet is
birds.
Cookies.
Yeah. Internet's for the birds. Boy, oh boy.
Just bad. Bad all around.
It's very punny. What are you talking about? Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.